Everybody knows not to drink and drive, but some people still think it's okay to take drugs and drive. Police have the authority, the ability, and the tools to determine if drivers are impaired by legal or illegal drugs. And because drug-impaired drivers can pose just as great a risk as drunk drivers, they face the same penalties, like the loss of their driver's license, a criminal record, fines, and more. A message from the RCMP, the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, and Arrive Alive, Drive Sober.
The Friends of CFMU card features over 30 businesses in the Hamilton area and beyond, Stony Creek, Ancaster, Dundas, and Burlington. Over 30 businesses offering you deals and special offers. All you've got to do is present the card. And to get a card, all you have to do is donate $30, just $30, to your community radio station, 93.3 FM CFMU and CFMU.ca. So check out our website, CFMU.ca, and click on Friends of CFMU at the bottom of the page. You'll learn all about who's on the card, where they're at, and what they offer. You'll find businesses like The Ship, This Ain't Hollywood, The Utterway Artisan Cheese Company, Underground Copy and Design, and White Elephant.
Those were Hot Sun, Ice Cream, Annihilation, and Say You Love Me by Wilco from their EP Hot Sun Cool Shroud. Thank you so much for listening to me for the last 30 minutes. This is 93.3 CFMU, redefining radio in your community since 1978. My name is M. Harrison Shin, your production coordinator. Make sure to check out our website, cfmu.ca, and all of our live shows are automatically podcasted through our website, so you can take a look and you can take a listen all of our previous episodes. For now, thanks again, and I'll see you next time.
Está escuchando su programa latinoamericano en el 93.3 FM de Ciudad.
Hosti radio dla polskiej społeczności.
Lokalitro programa singinotita in eto radiofono.
Dobora marifi radio der ishtemai shuma.
No, ja pebrešta radio Hamiltone, CFMU FM, 93.3.
Putoha, mai hua zi shen, dien fu ning de, se chui guan bo de si shan.
Miltoni, hai getroni radio jam. Verasa manelov radion, ser shirt.
CFMU. Tevilagodban a rádió újra definálva van.
Hubog ng panibagong programang radio sa inyong komunidad.
Redefinando la radio nella vostra comunità.
Redefinindo radio na sua comunidad.
CFMU, redefining radio in your community.
This is BJ the Prodigy Penn, and you're listening to The Hammer.
This is Donald Cowboy Show, and you're listening to The Hammer.
What's up, guys? This is Smooth Ben Henderson, and you're listening to The Hammer.
This is Dimitri Johnson, and you're listening to The Hammer.
This is Chris Wyman, and you're listening to the 93.3 The Hammer.
This is Matt Hughes, and you're listening to The Hammer.
I'm Michael DeCamp Bisping, and you're listening to Hammer MMA.
Roy McDonald.
This is TJ Dillashaw.
I'm Mark the Hammer Coleman, and you're listening to The Hammer.
I'm your host, Dave, joined as always by my co-host,
Liam Dunlop.
You're listening to us at 93.3 CFMU. You can also find us at thehammermma.com. We've got a great show for you. We get to talk about UFC 307, which we just finished watching. We also have the upcoming Royval and Tara card with plenty of Royval news, a little bit of other news, and some Bellator shenanigans as well. Greg and Steve could not be here. But Liam came through, because Liam's a beast like that.
You know, I got to, after such an amazing card last night, we got to talk about it.
You know what? It was a good card. I like this card. So, let's start at the top. Light Heavyweight Championship, Alex Pereira versus Khalil Rountree Jr. So, you know, Khalil Rountree, everyone thought he was overmatched and he was going to lose. He came out swinging, and he really, really put some incredible shots on Pereira in the first two rounds. But then, you know, clearly started to feel a little bit tired. Pereira started to really put the pressure on Rountree in round three. Then in round four, Rountree is bloodied up. He's cut open. He's bleeding all over the place. Pereira's scuffed up too. Prairie gets Roundtree against the fence and starts winging these huge hooks at him. Roundtree's taking the hooks, but blocking like a champ, hanging in there. And all of a sudden, Prairie's like, all right, well, the guy's head is clearly invincible. His chin is not going to crack. I'm just going to wail these giant uppercut hooks to his body. And he just started pommeling Roundtree. And finally, Roundtree cracked and caved in. So Prairie picks up the knockout by in 4 minutes and 32 seconds in the round four. Fight of the night. Easy fight of the night. This is about the most... This is, the best Prairie fight I've ever seen.
Well, it's one of the longest for sure. Like, we never usually see him get out of the first two or three rounds. So, yeah, Khalil Roundtree, you got to give him some respect. Tough as nails. Chin, unbelievable. But, yeah, Prairie finally figured out that he needed to start going to the body and just some unreal body shots right to the ribs, right to the solar plexus. Alex Pereira is just such a smart kickboxer, and he can get dirty along the cage. But yeah, I think this really shows a lot of respect to Khalil Roundtree in this one to last almost four full rounds against an absolute freak in Alex Pereira. And none of us even talked about last week. They were in Salt Lake City, which is really high above altitude. So it wasn't easy for either of these guys. But yeah, good performance by Pereira. Respect to Khalil Roundtree. This was definitely the fight of the night.
This was one of those fights where, like, there's fights where you kind of lose faith in both people, and there's fights where even the guy that loses, he goes up in your mind. And this is one of those fights where both guys look better. Pereira looked amazing. He looks like an unstoppable beast. He was able to go four rounds at altitude and keep the pressure on, which is insane. Khalil Roundtree, I mean, like, everyone kind of thought the guy was, he's number eight. He's kind of getting fed. No, he went out on a shield. He went out like a man, fought hard, looked way better than anyone else who's gone up against Alex Pereira, other than Israel Adesanya. And then, of course, the epic cut has to get posted on Instagram by Dana White. And everyone's like, oh, my God, this is just the weirdest, ugliest cut you've ever seen on a guy's head.
Yeah, that was a weird little cut that formed above his forehead. But yeah, Jamahal Hill pissed me off afterwards, yawning after this one. And then Alex Pereira, through his translator, said, oh, yeah, he's probably still waking up from UFC 300. That was brilliant.
It's the best shot. And I mean, like, okay. Jamahal Hill is tape-talking himself out of that fight by making himself look like such a clown. So, yeah, he's doing this like, oh, this fight was so boring, I'm yawning. It's the obvious fight of the night. And then it's like, dude, Pereira already fought you, and he knocked you out. Like, what are we talking about here?
After getting kicked in the nuts. Like, he literally got kicked in the nuts, yeah. Told her, Bean, chill out, I'm going to finish this by myself, and knocked him out right after that. So,
yeah. You fouled him, and he was like, don't worry about it, Herb, I got this. Jamahal Hill's too much of a wuss. And then he beat you.
Yeah, it was not a good look by Jamal there. Like, obviously he wants to stay in the picture, stay in the relevancy, but it's got to be ankle I have next, no? Like, I know it's not going to be the ideal matchup for Pereira, but it's got to be ankle I have. He deserves it.
I think it should be ankle I have, but there is one dark horse that I want to throw out there. So, look, Pereira, you know, Glover Teixeira and Pereira kind of made it clear, hey, we really did think about middleweight, but we don't think Pereira can get back down there. However, heavyweight's still something that we're kind of looking at. So Conor McGregor did this big thing where he bet $1 million that there was going to be a knockout in the fight. There was. He won $200,000. He kind of instantly was like, Pereira's amazing. He's one of my best fighters, but I'm not going to watch him again unless he goes up to heavyweight. And I think there's a lot of interest in seeing if Pereira can, or if Pereira could be a three division champion. Because let's be honest, no one really knows what's going on with Bones. We hope he's going to come back and fight Miocic, but he's very likely to retire right after that. And if he retires with the belt, Aspinall versus Alex Pereira for unifying or for taking the vacant belt, I kind of like it.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, Tom Aspinall versus Alex Pereira versus John Jones. obviously very intriguing. I don't trust John Jones. I just hope he ends up fighting Stipe eventually. And then I want Jones Aspinall first, though. I've always wanted to see that. But yeah, Alex Pereira against any of those guys. Pereira going up and becoming a three different weight class champion is insane to me. It's something you would never expect, because he wouldn't, like, I wonder what weight he would fight at heavyweight. Because if he could get up to like the 230, it'd be incredible to see, because he's obviously got the knockout power. But yeah, he'd be fighting against guys a lot bigger. It'd be so cool to see. But I disagree with Conor McGregor in that sense, where it's like, if he stays in light heavyweight, there's no fights that are interesting. Ankalaev's still a very interesting fight. There are still guys that are up and coming that he could take on eventually. But yeah, Pereira is owning this division right now.
I mean, Pereira got up to 231 last night. So he was at 231, which means he would have been able to fight at that walking around weight at heavyweight. He'd be a lot smaller than most of the guys at heavyweight. We know this. But, you know, look, Pereira versus Ankalaev makes sense to me, and I want that fight. However, and Aspinall versus Jones is the fight that I want maybe most of all. But with Jones kind of looking like maybe he's not going to take that fight, I don't know. Like, I would love to see Pereira continue at light heavyweight. I mean, I think he's making an argument for himself as being one of the best light heavyweights of all time. But if he does decide to go up, I wouldn't be too disappointed with that either. Women's bantamweight, Juliana Pena versus Raquel Pennington. So this was a fight. This was a close fight. I had it two rounds for Pennington, two rounds for Pena going into the fifth round. And I'll be honest, I thought Pennington won the fifth round. However, it went split decision, and Pena got the nod and the belt. Liam, how'd you score this one?
It was tight, yeah. But if you did have a 2-2, I do think Pennington won that fifth round. She was throwing more. She was landing more. She had a couple good takedown. She had decent takedown defense, but Juliana Pena got her to the ground, so obviously she won that round. The second round was brutal. Third round wasn't good for Pennington. She didn't look in it at all, but then she started getting some contact, and she started really throwing, but it wasn't Pennington's game. It was Pennington. She likes to rough it up and put it against the cage. Most of her strikes were at distance, and she couldn't really get the clinch game going. But yeah, overall, not a terrific fight by either of these ladies.
Well, to my mind, the way I saw it was, I thought Pena clearly won 2 and 3. She won 2 and 3 clearly. She roughed Pennington up in those rounds. No problem with that. And in my mind, I thought that after that, it looked kind of like she gassed, and Pennington really came back and put it on her in 4 and 5. So I think, I guess maybe the questionable round is the first round. And I thought in that round, when Pennington was fresh and Pena wasn't really hitting the takedowns, I thought it was Pennington. So, I mean, like, I'm not really sure how this one went to Pena, but it did. And that's the result that the UFC really kind of wanted, because they'd like to do Pena with a lady that we're going to talk about shortly. But, yeah, not a great night, a mixed night of decisions for the Pennington family. Let's put it like that.
There was some bad decisions on this whole card. So, yeah, we'll be talking about it throughout. But
bad reffing, too.
Very bad reffing. But I thought it was always, you got to beat the champ. That's how it used to always be. It was like, you got to beat the champ. You're not going to beat him on a split decision normally. But I don't know with this one. It was a tough one to call. And, yeah, I probably had it.
Pena won the belt, but she didn't beat the champ, in my opinion.
No, exactly, but she's a two-time bantamweight champion now, so whatever.
Yeah, so congratulations to Pena. I know Greg will be happy because he's a big fan. So we go forward to Mario Bautista versus Jose Aldo. So this is another one with some goofy decisions in this one. Very, very close fight. Not, I mean, like, in my mind, I thought Pennington versus Payne was a robbery. This one I don't think was a robbery. I think this one was close. But the story of the fight is Batista kept wrapping up Aldo, could not get through the takedown defense because Aldo's takedown defense is insane. So he kept just ending up against the cage. And Aldo was clearly hitting him with harder shots while Batista was stalled up against the cage. So they ended up giving it to Batista with the control. I don't really see it that much because, I mean, like, you get stuffed on 10 takedowns. You can't get the takedowns. You can't get any action going. And you're getting punched up. In my mind, I thought Aldo won this fight, but they gave it to Batista.
Yeah, because there was technically 7 minutes of control, but it was against the cage. Mario Batista not trying to advance position at all. As you said, 0 for 10 on takedown. So why isn't takedown defense put into the judging there? Like, I thought Aldo won this one as well because Mario Batista couldn't finish the job that he was trying to do. He was getting pieced up, and he couldn't get the takedown done. I was very disappointed with this one. Mario Batista did not prove anything to me in this one, and I had Aldo. I did have Aldo.
To me, like, 7 minutes of control, sure, but I mean, like, is it really in control if you cannot advance position and you cannot do damage?
No, absolutely not, and that's the issue. Batista was up against the cage, not trying to grab a double leg, not trying to grab a single leg. Aldo was terrific at takedown defense. Batista just could not do anything, and it was so dull to watch. So disappointing for Aldo here to get an L on his resume in a fight that, if it was just a normal fight and the referee would actually pull them apart when Batista was doing nothing, Aldo was piecing him apart on the feet, and it would have been a completely different story if the ref actually said, hey, stop doing nothing and let's get going.
Well, let's get a little more active here. Like, let's advance position or throw something. Like, so weird. But congratulations on Batista. He gets the win. Middleweights, Roman Delazzi versus Kevin Holland. So, fight happened. It's a scrap. Delazzi kind of went for a bit of a throw. And I think he hurt something inside of Holland. And he clearly hurt Holland pretty badly. So Holland goes back to his corner. He's been hit with a bunch of shots. He took this hard takedown. And his corner's like, hey, Kevin, can you continue? And Kevin's like, rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr the ref comes over and is like, okay, what's going on here? And they're like, nah, he can't do it. He's done. So I think he might have broken a rib on that takedown.
Yeah, he definitely did. You could see it in the slow-mo that they showed where, like, his one rib, but it was a super strange throw. Delice put his leg right over and twisted Kevin Holland kind of in a strange way. And yeah, you saw, like, Holland's rib just, like, fracture and not a fun time. If anyone's even had a bruised rib in their life, it's hard to breathe, let alone talk. Kevin Holland loves to talk, so it probably hurt him even more.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, DC is kind of yelling at the corner there, being like, what are you guys doing? If the guy can't continue, you got to call it. They did the right thing. They gave their fighter every chance. But I mean, like, if your rib's broken, you can't fight a guy like Roman Solace. He'll kill you. So Kevin Holland goes out. It is technically a knockout. But really no shame on that. Like, this one looked kind of like a weird fluky one to me. I don't think he breaks his rib like that on every takedown.
No, very fluky, but a win's a win for Delice, and he's going to stay in the top 10, so that's all right.
Yep. More women's bantamweights. Caitlin Vieira versus Kayla Harrison. So this one, fortunately, was not that controversial. Kayla Harrison won this one. However, I will say I felt this was one of the slower fights of the night.
Easily, yes. Kayla Harrison had it beautifully done in the first round. She had a great takedown. She had amazing. She was in top control for a while. And then the second round, Vieira was starting to find herself on the feet. Harrison was trying to stand with Vieira, which wasn't too smart. So that's probably where the judge gave Vieira one round. But yeah, Harrison got back to the wrestling, got back to the judo in the third. It wasn't great. Harrison got bloodied up. She said it was her first time ever bleeding inside of a cage. She cut a really weird promo, and now we're probably going to see Harrison versus Pena, who probably could give a shit less.
I don't know. I mean, like, it's definitely one of the top fights in women's bantamweight, but women's bantamweight is a division, not the top division for women's MMA. We go forward. Next up was the prelims, where Joaquin Buckley defeated Stephen Thompson. So this one was kind of the classic that we expected. Stephen Thompson was moving him around him, outpointing him, looked like the striking was better. Joaquin Buckley was able to get some big takedowns, so we thought he was going for that strategy. And then about 2 minutes into the third round, he just charged Stephen Thompson. Stephen Thompson gave him a head kick, and Buckley just saw red or something. I don't know what happened, but he just charged the guy, threw a huge flurry, hit Thompson with an absolute rocket of a shot, and knocked Stephen Thompson out. So that's another knockout for Joaquin Buckley, and another knockout loss for Stephen Thompson.
Yeah, it was only the second one of Thompson's career, which is crazy. But Buckley, this was literally technique versus power. Like, you could see the technique in Stephen Thompson. He was landing some great counter strikes. Buckley was starting to be on the back foot for a little bit there in the second round. But yeah, Buckley just throws this wacky, wild, maybe half Superman punch. I don't even know what you would describe this thing as. Lands a clean on Stephen Thompson's face, though, and knocks him out. So it just shows how much power Buckley has, especially at this welterweight division. But it wasn't too definitive to me. Obviously, he got $50,000. But the guy with, if this was a 35-year-old Stephen Thompson even, there's no way he's getting hit by this strike by Buckley. But Wonderboy at 40 plus. Or his
chin holds up.
Yeah, or his chin is a lot stronger. But yeah, Buckley obviously has crazy power, but he's got to work on some technique because it just did not look pretty, but it worked.
Look, I love Stephen Thompson. I've been a huge fan of his for a long time, but I think it's getting time to put gloves in the cage. Because, I mean, like, I called this last week. I basically just said, I think that 5 years ago, 35-year-old Stephen Thompson, 36-year-old Stephen Thompson, I call him to win this fight, no problem. I called Joaquin Buckley because I was like, hey, I think that Stephen Thompson has slowed enough that Joaquin Buckley can now catch him. And Joaquin Buckley has crazy power. And that's exactly what happened. It took him two rounds to get there, three rounds to get there. But eventually, Stephen Thompson, at altitude, at 41 years old, slowed down enough that Joaquin Buckley was like, I think I can just rush the guy and knock him out. And he did. And that's not a situation that's going to improve in time. I don't think you can fix that. I think that's going to get worse in time. So, I don't know. To me, it was definitive. It just shows that Stephen Thompson cannot quite hang at that top level in welterweight anymore. He's aged. Women's strawweights. Marina Rodriguez versus Yasmin Lucindo. So, another close decision on this one. Bit of a robbery in a lot of people's minds. But Lucindo picks up the win over Marina Rodriguez.
Yeah, it was a weird decision here. I might have had it for Rodriguez, but it was a pretty slow fight. Like, none of these ladies really took a lot of strikes. Like, they were landing about like 15 strikes a round. Wasn't too pretty. The first round I had for Lucindo because Marina Rodriguez just couldn't find her range. Second round I had for Rodriguez, and the third was kind of a toss-up. Rodriguez was throwing a lot more volume, but wasn't landing too much, and Lucindo was picking her strikes, but I don't know. Like, you don't want to put it in the hand of the judges, but it seemed like Lucindo might have wanted to because of how the judging was. And yeah, Lucindo, there's going to be a win, and in 3 years we're going to kind of forget about it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, like, I don't think it was a great win, but it was a win, so take what you can get. Lightweights. Alexander Hernandez versus Austin Hubbard. Another split decision. Alexander Hernandez picks this one up. What'd you think of this fight?
It was good for Alex Hernandez to win this one very last minute. Like, I think he was like a week and a half ago he came into this one. But yeah, Hubbard's, whoever gave a 30-27 for Hubbard's on crack. Like
this was another one where like he went for 12 takedowns and got stuffed on all of them. Like, how do you score a stuffed takedown?
Yeah, I don't know. Whoever gave Hubbard all three rounds is definitely cracked out. Hernandez won this one, but yeah, the whole takedown thing is getting really annoying to me, and I know it's getting annoying to Dana White, because if it's not there, stop forcing it. And if the ref notices this, you've got, like, obviously you got to give him a chance because that's a part of people's games. But once it gets this dull and like this repetitive, the ref has to step in after a while. And like, if it's just getting held up against the cage, give him 15 seconds. And if nothing's going on, break him up. Let's get this shit going.
Yeah. I think you gotta be like, hey, 15 seconds in, you gotta be like, hey guys, let's work. Like, you got to either advance or you got to do some damage. And if the guy is not advancing and not doing damage, he can't give the guy the round.
Or all three.
Or all three. So, yeah, I thought Hernandez won this one pretty clearly. I don't think it should have been split. Middleweights, Cesar Almeida versus Ihor Poteria. So, this one, I think we can take a little bit of time on this one. So, Cesar Almeida won this fight. In my opinion, Cesar Almeida probably should have won this fight. He was throwing more strikes. He was, you know, he got taken down a couple times, but like, he recovered and he was winning the fights on. He's winning the fight on the feet, in my opinion. However, this fight had the worst roughing I have ever seen in a fight, and I've seen John Jones fight. So. He hit Poteria with an eye poke in a clinch. It happens. Then he hit him with another one. And then he hit him with another one. And then he hit him with another one. And then he hit him with a low blow. And then he hit him with another eye poke. And the ref's just standing there watching this, not calling anything. Like, not giving any warnings. Not like, at one point after the first eye poke, he pulls him out. He's like, Terry, are you good? Do you need less? Like, do you need to get some water to wash your eye? Terry's like, yes. He's like, okay, keep fighting.
Yeah, that was such a bad look. So the ref that was doing this one, I've never heard of before. Have you heard of Dave Selchad?
No, Selchad? I have not.
So he's definitely some Utah guy. He's definitely, they've just threw him in a random fight. And it was, yeah, this was bad. Like, you cannot allow this to happen. There should have definitely been points taken for all the different fouls that were given. It was so bad. Poteria, I feel bad for, because he didn't look bad in this fight. He actually looked pretty decent, but when you can't see and you're at altitude and you're built like him, you're gonna get gassed, you're gonna get tired, there's gonna be obviously sight issues, and yeah, Cesar Almeida took advantage in a really poor way.
I mean, like, after three or four eye pokes, you gotta, like the first one. Okay, I understand. Hey, it's an accident. Like, we're not gonna call this one right away. The second one, you gotta give a warning for, and the third one, you gotta start taking points, and then a fourth one, and then a low blow after that. Like, what are we talking about? What are we doing? So, Cesar Almeida should have been docked points, in my opinion, one or two. This which would have possibly changed the outcome of this fight, because it was like a pretty competitive fight. And the other thing was, Poteria was losing this one on the feet. So he kept going for clinches, and he kept going for takedowns. And whenever he got caught into a clinch, Sejusted, the ref was like, okay, work. Okay, no, we're splitting up. He was separating these guys so fast. And it's like, well, why is Poteria not getting a chance to work the clinch game? But, you know, like, Austin Hubbard is able to stall there forever. Mario Bautista is able to stall there forever. Like, what the heck is this? Does this ref not have, like, did this ref not like Ihor Poteria? Like, what was going on?
It seemed like it, eh? Like, these guys, like, once they go to states that aren't big, like, not like a New York or a Nevada or a California, they have to talk to these refs before these fight nights. Like, these are big. This is a UFC pay-per-view. They got to talk to them, and they got to figure it out that, okay, are we allowing this? Are we not allowing this? You got, like, it can't be different every single fight, because you need continuity in these things. And it was a bad look on the Utah Athletic Commission.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Apparently Dana was not even in the building when this fight happened, because let's be honest, Dana's got things to do. But afterwards, like the UFC VP was like, hey, commission, you got to pull this guy. You can't let him keep refereeing. So this ref got pulled from that night. He didn't get the ref again, so just dead. And then the other thing is, like, as you said, I think what you said was the best point I've heard. This card was all over the place. All over the place. Sometimes the takedowns were counting. Sometimes they weren't counting. Sometimes it was strikes. Sometimes it was not strikes. Like, there's no level of consistency here. And how do you have a sport when the rules are not consistently enforced?
Yeah, we've seen bad ref nights. We've seen bad judge nights. And this is the one night that I can remember in a long time that it was bad both. And yeah, it's not a good look. And do you think Dana's going to want to come back to Utah after seeing this? It depends how much money you can make. So that's always the answer.
Yeah, and we still have more of the card to go. So light heavyweights, Ryan Spann versus OSP. These guys were flinging hands, and Ryan Spann kind of caught him, clocked him, jumped on his back, and guillotined him to death. So good on Ryan Spann. Picked up $50,000 for himself. Court McGee versus Tim Means. This was another pretty good fight. First round submission for Court McGee. Looked good. Got the neck crank. Got into a rear naked choke position and switched into a neck crank. So rare submission defeat for Tim Means. And then lastly, Tisha Pennington versus Carla Esparza. So this was another decision. This was another split decision. This one went the Pennington way. So Tisha picked up the win here. In my opinion, I don't think she won this fight.
I'm going to be honest. I probably should have watched it because it was a retirement fight, but I was at my girlfriend's family's Thanksgiving. Because in Canada, we do Thanksgiving in October. I didn't watch it. So it's all you on this one.
Fair enough. Okay. So again, Pennington got a lot of takedowns, as you'd expect. One of the few was able to complete them. Pennington clearly won the fight on the feet. So no real arguments there. Pennington was definitely the better striker in this one. But in my opinion, I felt that the two rounds where Carla Esparza did have control should have gotten her the 29-28. So, yeah, weird night of fights. Judging all over the place, card all over the place. One funny story that we're going to say that I'm just going to say now, this is kind of good, should be in the news, but I want to tell it before we go on to break here. So Alex Hernandez came in to this fight, and he is a short notice fill-in. He's going to take on Austin Hubbard. He was not very impressed by Salt Lake City because it's a city of pacifists. And we all know that a warrior with the heart of Alexander Hernandez, he doesn't like hanging out in a city of pacifists. He's out for a walk with his cornerman, Brandon Royval. Not impressed by the city. And then all of a sudden, they hear shooting. They hear gunshots. And Royval yells, oh my God, it's gunshots. And I guess Hernandez is like, well, Royval, you always yell it's gunshots. And then they see a bunch of people running. And they're like, oh man, it really is gunshots. Then a dude comes running towards them. And they're like, hey man, what's going on? And he's like, nothing, get out of here. And Royval realizes that this potentially is the shooter. So he runs the guy down and captures him. So Alexander Hernandez and Royval. Alexander Hernandez is apparently, he's telling the story. He's like, I was like, we need to run away because they're shooting. And Brandon Royval was like, no, I got to chase this guy down because, like, he could be a shooter. So somehow in the city of pacifists, they still managed to wind up in a goofy shooting. And Brandon Royval decides that he is going to run after a shooter and hunt him down, a potential shooter and hunt him down, because he's just a good citizen and that's the kind of man that he is. So lovely work there. Lovely story from Alexander Hernandez. And we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the next pay-per-view or the next fight night, which is Brandon Royval versus Tetsuya Tara. Stay tuned.
I'm José Aldo, I'm here the Hammer.
And we are back at 93.3 CFMU. You can also find us at thehammermma.com. And let's talk about the next card coming up this Saturday, October 12th. Flyweight action. Brandon Royval versus Tatsuya Itara.
I think it's good. I like, it's obviously a top-notch flyweight fight, but as people love to hate flyweights, this is a 1-5. This is a very interesting matchup because Brandon Royval's last loss was to the champion, and that's when he fought for the title. And then they put him up against Brandon Moreno, who he's previously lost to, and he ends up beating him. So Brandon Royval still has game. Brandon Royval can never win the belt. That's just always what we figured out from him. Tetsuya Itara, nobody's been talking about this kid. This kid's 6-0 in the UFC. He hasn't fought like the craziest big names, and then they put him up against Alex Perez in a main event card in June, and he destroys Alex Perez's leg. He just keeps throwing these crazy leg kicks, and Alex Perez just could not handle it, and he goes down. And everyone should be watching because Tatsuro Tara is a killer. He has 16 wins, 12 by finish, and that's very rare to see in the flyweight division. And in his UFC fights, he has 4 finishes. So he has a submission game. He has 2 submission wins. He has 2 TKOs. He is an all-around great fighter. Brandon Royval doesn't lose by finish too often. He has 7 losses, 5 by decision. He knows how to win a tough decision fight. The question is, can Tyra finish Royval? I don't know. We haven't really seen Royval go up against a big, tough guy like Tyra. Obviously not big, like he's 5'7". But Tyra's got...
relative to being a flyweight.
Yeah, so yeah, he's bigger compared to some of the guys in here. Tyra's got a little bit of a reach advantage. He's got terrific groundwork, as I just mentioned. But Royval's, I think he's more all-around, and he knows how to win decisions. I think Royval wins this one. I think it stops the Tyra train a little bit. Tyra still has plenty of time to go. He's only 24. I think Royval wins this one just because of experience.
So, Tatsuro Tara at 24 years old, 6-0 in the UFC, like you said. When he was stepping up to take Alex Perez, I was like, oh, this is a big jump in competition. I don't know if he's going to be able to do this one. Well, he did it, and now he's ranked number 5 in the division, and Perez is down to 6. Royval's number 1. He should be number 1. He's right behind the champion. He's a beast. He can do everything. And that's the thing, is both these guys are super well-rounded. Tyra is an amazing striker, and he's got a good submission game. Brandon Royval, I've seen him win by guillotine chokes. I've seen him win by, you know, knockouts. I've seen him win by decisions. He can do a bit of everything, too. But, like you said, he can't beat the best guys. He can't beat Pantoja. He can't beat Brandon Moreno consistently. He's done it once. I don't know, man. My brain is telling me that the more experienced, more skilled experienced Royval should win this fight. That's what my brain is telling me. But something in my gut is feeling that Tyra might be able to pull this one off, because I have seen Royval lose to Pantoja by a rear naked choke. I have seen him be punched out by Brandon Moreno, and I know Tyra can do it, and I've never seen Tyra lose. I think I gotta call Tyra here. Convince me I'm wrong.
Yeah, I honestly don't hate the call. It has been a while since he has been finished, Royval. It has been since 2021, so he's really been working on that, but the competition, like, the way he starched Mateus Nicolau was brilliant. But then I go back to the Bontorin fight where he might have lost that fight. We thought Royval was done after the first Pantoja fight, and then he makes his little run, then goes back against Pantoja for the title. Loses that one. We think he's done. Goes up against Moreno, wins a tough fought split decision. Tyra's good, but yeah, I still got to go with Royval. I think based on experience, I think Royval still has it. But Tyra's a freak, so you never know. I'm just looking up odds here. You go ahead.
Yeah, I am looking forward to this one. I think this one could be weird. I think this one could be wacky. I don't know, man. I got a good feeling about Tyra. I think he's going to go all the way. So I am looking forward to it.
Tyra's about a minus 200 favorite. So I think Vegas is on your side.
No, I'm worried. We go forward. Middleweights. Brad Tavares still hanging in there, taking on Park Young-jung.
Oh, man. This being the co-main, like, I look deeper into this card, and I see fights that I'd rather be in this spot. I'd rather even, like, Pat Sabatini versus Jonathan Pierce. But Jun-Young Park is a really amazing submission threat, and he's a killer as well. So I have no faith in Brad Tavares anymore. It's sad to say. He's a decision guy. He wins by decision, or he gets starched. He's been put up against some freaks. We always make fun of him because if you look at the notes on any of his fights, he's never been a performance of the night guy. He's never had a fight of the night. He's just a very mid UFC fighter that's been in the game forever. But you got to respect him for staying in and the longevity for not being the most exciting fighter. Park is different. Park has some crazy submission wins. He can snatch your neck and finish you. Brad Tavares has never been subbed. That's where I'm scared about. Can Park get this one to the ground and sub Tavares? I think he can. I think Park wins this one by submission, and he's the first one to submit Brad Tavares.
So there's a lot to love about Park. Like you said, his submission skills are amazing. He's topped out guys that I consider pretty good, like Dennis Tallulah. He's also lost. He's been knocked out by Gregory Rodriguez. He lost to Andre Munoz in a split last time. So, I mean, like, the guy's not invincible. He even got tapped out by Anthony Hernandez, who we just talked about. So the guy can lose. Meanwhile, Brad Tavares, the guy's 36. He's not great. He's never going to be great. We know he's not going to make it to the belt or nothing like that, I don't think. But with that said, he doesn't lose by knockout he loses by knockout rarely. He never loses by submission. And it's always goofy decisions. It's goofy decisions all day with Tavares. And I think if you wanted to fight Junyun Park, stuff the takedowns, don't let him take you to the ground, and go to a goofy decision. So I think with Tavares being big and consistent and not easy to take down, it's horrible, but I think I like Tavares to win this one.
Yeah, you might not be wrong. Let me look up the odds. Park is a slight favorite. He's about a 170 favorite. So it's not too far-fetched.
Yeah, no, it's a fight. I'm interested in it. So we go forward. We're going to talk about the next one here, which is lightweights, Grant Dawson versus Rafa Garcia.
For me, Grant Dawson's not done. He had that one blip against Bobby Green where he got starched after being a massive favorite. And that got Bobby Green back on the hype train. So he came back, fought Joe Selecki. That was pretty much a feed to get Grant Dawson back on. Rafa Garcia, he's okay to me. He's got a crazy ground game as well. But he couldn't even finish Clay Guida in 2023. I don't know. I still have a lot of faith in Grant Dawson. I think he's still really good. He's only 30. Like, obviously only is a thing, but he came in from Contender Series in 2017. He went on a crazy run. He had a weird draw against Ricky Glenn. Won three more. Lost to Bobby Green. He still has a terrific UFC resume. Rafa Garcia doesn't do it for me. Grant Dawson by decision.
I'll go with you on the Grant Dawson train. I don't have that much faith in Rafa Garcia. Someone would agree with you there. Oh, yeah, Grant Dawson by decision.
Yeah, Grant Dawson minus 400 favorite. So, yeah, that's probably the way to go on this one.
Next up, women's strawweights, Julie Pollastri versus Corey McKenna.
Corey McKenna was my prospect of the year a couple of years ago in 2022. Didn't fight often. She didn't even fight in 2023 after I called her. And then she comes back against Jacqueline Amarim and loses by an armbar. And I don't know, she might be done. But Julia Pollastri, we haven't seen much from either. She got her Contender Series win in 2023, lost to Josephine Knudsen. Like, oh man, that's a weird loss. Knudsen is on her way up, but I still have some faith in Corey McKenna. Like, it wasn't the best call ever for prospect of the year, but I still have some faith in McKenna to get this one done.
I don't know, man. I don't want to call against your prospect of the year here, but I don't really have that much faith in Corey McKenna. All right, I'll go with you on the Corey McKenna train, but I have no confidence.
She's a dog, too. Corey McKenna's a plus 125, making Pollastri about a minus 150. So I don't think anybody really has.
No, because Pollastri's, like, okay at tapouts, and I've seen I don't know. I think with Corey McKenna, like, all she's really got is her ground game, and I've seen her lose on the ground.
Yeah, I know. She's still so young, though. That's the thing. She's 25. She came in so early. She came in 2020 when she was 21. So, I don't know. Unless this is – I think this is a make-or-break fight for her, so we'll see what happens.
All right, next up, we have got we go back up to welterweights, where Dan Rodriguez will be taking on Alex Morono. So Dan Rodriguez is 37 years old. He is long in the tooth, but he's made his way in and out of the UFC a couple times, and he's generally pretty competent. Alex Morono, 34 years old, so he's not a spring chicken either, and he has also been in and out of the UFC, but in for quite a long time now. Where are you on this one? What are you thinking?
I don't know what the goal is for this fight. Rodriguez is on three straight losses to good opponents. Let's be real. Neil Magny, Machado Gary, and Gastelum. Like, those are solid dudes. But Morono hasn't fought anybody like that. He's a decision guy. He also choked out Tim Means back in the day.
And also beat Court McGee. So he is like the top of the bottom, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of the guys that can beat all these crappy fighters, these old guys. I think Morono beats Rodriguez too, then. Like, Rodriguez, he's lost every possible way in his last three. I guess I got to pick Morono. It's not a main card fight for me.
Top of the bottom is what we're going with here. Alexander Morono can beat old, broken down men. So, yeah. There we go. Middleweights, Abdul Razak Al-Hassan versus Josh Fremd. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan is 12-6. Josh Fremd is 11-6. Really, how excited are you for this fight?
Not at all. Like, I don't know how you can be. Josh Fremd, we always make fun of because his name is just so poorly spelled. And Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, like, comes in and out and in and out. Fremd has lost his last two. He got absolutely starched by Kopilov with that nasty liver punch, just folded Fremd. Al-Hassan has some wacky fights. He can finish you. He has to finish you early or he gets destroyed. He has 12 wins. They're all by knockout. So he's a one-trick pony. Can Al-Hassan knock out Fremd? Yes. So that's why I'm going to pick Al-Hassan.
So if you were to look at Al-Hassan's last eight fights, five of them are losses, two of them are wins, and one of them is a no contest. I just think at 39 years old, he can't do it anymore. And I kind of like Josh Fremd to kind of weather the storm here. But, I mean, like, man, I feel really bad about calling Fremd in anything. So I'm not happy about it, but I'm going to call Fremd here. I think this one goes to a goofy decision.
You should have just called a no contest.
There is a chance that this one does go no contest. I mean, yeah. These are two guys that can, that if something stupid happens, it could happen in this fight.
Yeah.
Onwards to the prelims. Chidi Njokwani will be taking on Jared Gooden. Njokwani is a pretty good striker. Gooden, as I recall, is a pretty good grappler. What do you think of this one? 23-10 for Njokwani versus 23-9 for Gooden.
Yeah, we've seen Jared Gooden all over the place. He's been in and out of the UFC for a long while. Njokwani's been in Bellator. He was in Bellator for a long time. Then he came in through the Contender Series, and he's been okay. Like, he's 3-3. Since he's been back, I'm not picking this one because it's so incredibly mid. I can't pick it, but I hope it's exciting, but I don't have faith.
I'll give Njokwani one last shot. I've been burned with it by him before, but he's got height, he's got reach, he's a good striker. I don't think Gooden's guaranteed to be able to get in on that size, so why not Njokwani? But, yeah. flyweights, CJ Vergara versus Ramazanbek Temurov. CJ Vergara is 12-5-1. He's 33 years old. Ramazanbek is 17-2. He's 27 years old, and I believe this will be his UFC debut.
Davey, I say you just run the rest of this card because I don't got much to say, especially about Chris Barnett Jr. Tafa.
You don't want to talk about Ramazanbek Temurov?
I'm good, buddy. Yeah, you run this card. You're good.
I really want to talk about Ramazanbek Temurov because, I mean, like, let's be honest. I think I did a pretty good job of pronouncing that name.
Oh, that was clean. It was absolute perfection. And I'm going to let you go out on a...
Flyweights. Jonathan Pierce versus Pat Sabatini. Welterweights, Themba Garimba versus Nico Price. That one could potentially be entertaining. Themba Garimba is another dude where weird things happen. Heavyweights, Chris Barnett versus Junior Tafa. We're going to put a pin in this one and come back to it. Bantamweights, Dan Argueta versus Corey Hadden. Flyweights, Clayton Carpenter versus Lucas Rocha. And that is it for that card, but we're going to come back to Huggy Bear, Chris Barnett versus Junior Tafa. So, Huggy Bear is short, but huge, and just so wacky, so goofy. I believe he's recently changed his name to Beast Boy, so good for him. But, like, this is a guy where he just goes out to go out on his shield, and whenever he wins, it's always insane, and whenever he gets knocked out, it's usually pretty insane, too. Junior Tafa and Justin Tafa, they've been making a pretty good effort to make themselves some unlikable dudes. And Junior's on two straight losses now, including by, like, leg hooks from De Lima and a heel hook from Walter Walker, the older brother, I believe, of Johnny Walker. So Junior Tafa wanted to have a feud with the Walker brothers, him and his brother Justin, against Walter and Johnny. And instead he gets dealt out to Chris Barnett, who is just kind of an entertaining, lovable guy, even though Barnett cannot make weight at heavyweight. So I'm kind of rooting for Beast Boy here. I hope he makes weight, and I hope he wins this fight. But I always have fun with Chris Barnett fights, I'll be honest.
Chris Barnett is one of the funniest guys because, like, the spinning wheel kick he had over Jean Valente, and then he does his little, like, splits routine. Like, he's the shortest, chubbiest, like, 5'9", and he maxes out heavyweight. Like,
Can't consistently make heavyweight. Has missed weight at heavyweight.
Yeah, he literally missed weight last time against Jay Collier. Like, it's insanity. But yeah, I hate this fight so much, but I hope something wacky happens. Like, it's gonna be so funny.
I'm telling you, this is a sleeper fight of the night for me because something goofy always happens when Huggy Bear fights. Always. Beast Boy. Okay.
He's Huggy Bear though.
I'll call them both. Look, we normally do a Pearson's Point where Greg calls, where as a busy man with a child, where would he watch this card? Where would he start watching this card from to maximize his enjoyment? Unfortunately, Pearson is not here to give us the Pearson Point. So we're going to go to the Liam Dunlop Express here, the Liam Ladder. So, Liam, if you're going to begin climbing this ladder, As a young man who likes to drink and party and has a girlfriend to hang out with, where would you start watching this card to maximize your enjoyment of everything else you could be doing on a Saturday night?
Main event. Main event only. That's the only relevant fight for me.
You're not going to watch Tavares versus Park Jung-young?
Absolutely not.
Oh.
I'm sorry, it's a main event only for me. Like, Grant Dawson's intriguing, but that's about it for me.
Corey McKenna was your prospect of the year. You're not going to go down four?
Well, she stinks. So, like, that's just, yeah, that's how it's got to be.
So, main event only for Liam's ladder. I'm going to be honest, I find it hard to disagree, but I will end up watching the Huggy Bear fight.
You're going to watch, but... In this sense, that means you'd have to watch every fight, pretty much.
Oh, no, I'm definitely not going to do that.
You're turning on it now.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm not a guy who's jumping from the point. I'm not a guy who's climbing the ladder. I will track down the one fight I want to watch, and then, like, I feel no shame at all in skipping Josh Friend. So that's about it for UFC for the week. Not a ton in the news right now. There's just, you know, the typical emotional meltdown from Conor McGregor. I refuse to report on it because it happens every week. Lots of drama about UFC 307, but we've already talked about most of that. However, Bellator had some drama of their own.